his left. Tough shot. Made it. End of the line.
Bad pass. Kept away, and Indiana's got it. Up the floor to Oladipo. He will lay up. Score! Jones. Westbrook for the win. Yes!
It's Indiana. It's Indiana.
What's going on, Hoosier fans? Welcome back to another edition of Podcast on the Brink. Matt Dollinger here, once again joined by my new co-host in his second show today, Justin Albers. What's going on, Justin?
Man, I'm just happy I didn't screw things up so much the first time that I'm welcome back for a second show.
Oh, nonsense. You'll be back for many more. You did a great job. Happy to have you back again. Before we get started, a little change up today. Originally, we were scheduled to have Pat Forty on today, but technical difficulties are not going to allow him to be on today, so we're going to try and have him on later this season. But we've got a great show for you anyways. We're going to have Chris Corman of the Baltimore Sun, formerly of the Herald Times, come on and talk about the evolution of Tom Crean during his first 5 years at Indiana. Then we're going to have Alex Bozich, Inside the Hall founder, come on at the end of the program and kind of answer some of the questions you sent us on the Inside the Hall forum for Pat Forty. Instead, we're going to kind of address those mailbag style. So, should be a good show, Justin. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm pumped to get into it. And we had a great game on Saturday. As everybody well knows, Indiana took down Michigan 81-73 and jumped back to the top of the rankings this week that were released on Monday. So, Indiana's back on top, and that game was something to be around or be at with the electricity that was going through that building on Saturday night.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, for such an amazing game, we're still talking about two plays that basically had nothing to do with the outcome. Both Victor Oladipo dunks. One, the dunk that almost broke Assembly Hall, which kind of froze time for everybody who was witnessing it. And the one at the end of the game, which I thought was actually maybe the best dunk I've ever seen Victor Oladipo throw down, but most people probably missed it because it was out of the corner of your eye on the telecast, or you'd maybe turned away already with the outcome already decided. Did you catch that dunk?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the media people actually missed it too. They were already headed back to the media room and didn't see it, but I watched it happen, and then Tim Hardaway Jr. was not too happy about it afterward, and Oladipo tried to apologize to him, but he wasn't having it.
Yeah, I understand that, and I think he did immediately as well. He apologized after the game, but, you know, just caught up in the moment. I mean, it's kind of a lesser version of storming the court. I'm just going to throw down an insanely sick dunk to finish the game.
And you know Victor Oladipo as a player is a guy that is always impacted by outside, by the crowd. I mean, he's a guy that can raise his level of play in the big games, in the big environments, and so obviously, the environment got to him there. He was feeling it coursing through his veins, about to upset the number one team on his home court again, and he just maybe went a little crazy. I mean, I can't say if that was me and I had the ability to dunk that I wouldn't do something like that with a wide-open basket and time still on the clock.
I'd be doing that every chance I got, yeah. And he's probably trying to make up a little bit for the one he did miss, which you know, what can be said? That was something that even Blake Griffin would admire. That was crazy athleticism.
It's not like there's some Michigan guy in the lane that he, like, made fun of or made look bad by jumping over him to dunk at the buzzer. I mean, it was a wide-open basket. It didn't even count. It's not really a big deal.
No. Well, about the game, Justin, you know, there was a lot of positives. I think that the best thing maybe was the start of the game. IU just came out lights out. But, you know, Michigan did, you know, mount a rally that I think we all knew they were going to make, and the Hoosiers were able to hold them off in the end. What impressed you the most about Saturday's game?
Yeah, I was impressed by Michigan, the way that they were able to hang in the game in the second half, because I never really thought Indiana's level of play dwindled like it did maybe against Minnesota earlier in the year when they played really well in the first half, not so much in the second half. But obviously the story probably is Cody Zeller. I mean, Victor Oladipo continues to be the man for this team, but Cody Zeller, who had some not so Cody Zeller like offensive performances recently, really came to play. 8 for 10 from the field, a double double, 19 points and 10 rebounds, and a lot of people are talking about. I know Pat Forty in his column today talked about the combination of Zeller and Oladipo maybe being the best 1-2 punch in the nation, and it's kind of hard to debate that right now. the way that those two guys played on the biggest stage on Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, Cody Zeller is now playing like the guy everybody thought he was going to be this season when he was in the preseason player of the year conversation, the favorite, actually. And Oladipo is a guy who's exceeded everybody's expectations, even his biggest fans, and, you know, has kind of emerged as a, you know, top 10 player in college basketball. I mean, I don't know where each one falls exactly, but I don't think anyone would make a conversation to say that they're not in that group right now.
Yeah, and I think just looking at that game on Saturday and the way they got contributions from almost everybody, and on the national stage, everybody's kind of recognizing now that Indiana's more than just Cody Zeller and even more than just Cody Zeller and Victor Oladipo, because you got contributions from the bench. Not so much Will Sheehy, but Jeremy Hollowell played better. Christian Watford played perhaps one of his better games of the Big Ten season. Yogi Ferrell was making threes at the beginning and sealing the game with free throws late. I mean, you had everybody kind of contributing, and it really shows you, like Bob Kravitz mentioned on our show last week, if these guys have five people in double figures in a game, they're probably not going to lose, and that held true on Saturday.
Yeah, and Will Sheehy only had 2 points, actually, so it could have been even more. And the best part about this is that this isn't the last time IU and Michigan are going to play each other. We've got the March 10th showdown, and then a potential showdown in the Big Ten tournament, or even the NCAA tournament. What do you think about that, the March 10th game? It's the last one in the Big Ten season. Do you think, you know, having the game in Ann Arbor is going to be enough to change the outcome?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see Indiana going to Michigan and winning against the team we saw on Saturday, because that's a really, really good team. They didn't get much out of their freshmen, Glenn Robinson III and Nick Stauskas. Trey Burke and Tim Hardaway kind of had to do everything, but that's a really good team, and it's going to be hard for Indiana to go there. I would expect to see a split, but like you mentioned, even that game probably won't be the last time we see these two teams matched up this year.
Yeah, I don't think it will be. All right, let's go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by our first guest and good friend, Chris Corman of the Baltimore Sun. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. We are now joined by Chris Corman, who has taken time out of his busy schedule of attending the Ravens Celebration Parade to come on the podcast. Did you catch a glimpse of Ray Lewis today, Chris?
I actually rode with him in the vehicle. It was me and him. you know, it's covering the business of sports. You get to do things like that. No, actually, I was nowhere near the debacle that was the parade today. So many people flooding to downtown Baltimore. Just on estimate, I think there might have been, the police are saying there were like 95,000 people or something ridiculous like that at the stadium. It only holds 60-some thousand. So, pretty wild day. And particularly enough, there was also a stabbing in Baltimore. So what? The city's reputation went up a little bit and now has completely plummeted, I'm sure, once the national media sees word of that. So just another day here in Baltimore.
Well, I was disappointed with the Super Bowl outcome because I bet my friend that I took the over on how many appearances Tom Crean would get on the Super Bowl telecast. You know, I figured he was in the Harbaugh the box right next to Joni. The only question was whether they were going to zoom out far enough to have him in the shot. Unfortunately, the line was 1.5 appearances, and the final total was 0. So I was a little bit off on that one.
Yeah, the Harbaugh family does a really good job hiding. I mean, you never see them on TV. So I think they're the only people ever who said, like, the story's not about us, and then actually backed it up. And most people are like, the story's not about us, and then smile at the camera every 3 minutes. But the Harbaughs actually disappear.
Well, you know a lot about a distant or close Harbaugh relative, Tom Crean, who you know, you covered for years in Bloomington and is now kind of in a dramatically different position in his career than when you were covering him. Not sure if there's a correlation there or not, but I just want to get your thoughts, you know, and have you on the program today. Let's kind of find out if you're surprised at where IU is at right now. You used to be an insider. Now you kind of have an outside perspective. What's it been like watching the Hoosiers this year kind of, you know, be the best team in the country, or at least one of them?
Right. I mean, to be honest, it is really sort of surreal to think. I did catch the end of the Michigan game Saturday night, and was preparing to work Sunday. And to just think about one family having a situation like that where Indiana, you know, pretty thoroughly beats the number one team in the country and shows that they're going to be the number one team in the country. And then the coach gets on a plane the next morning to go watch a football game for the world championship that his two brother-in-laws are coaching against. I mean, it's just unfathomable to really think about that. But at the same time, I think, you know, we all knew that Tom Crean was going to recruit. Tom Crean, you don't have to go any further than his introductory press conference at IU to understand how the guy can walk into pretty much any living room in America and get a kid fired up to come play for a place like IU. The pairing of IU's, you know, inherent tradition and the fan base and just really taking it to a different level for love of basketball, pairing those two together was, I think, always understood was going to be an unstoppable force. You know, I think there were early moments where Crean slipped and maybe if he had flipped badly enough, it wouldn't come through. But getting Cody Zeller really, you know, and that changed the program completely. It changed the whole feel of everything IU was doing. Obviously, you know, we now understand that Oladipo was a huge get. Sheehy were important. And the class before that, Jordan Hull, getting Hulls was really important. But Zeller was really the guy that once they got him, I knew that Tom Crean had gotten the program to where it needed to be and what he wanted it to be. So it's easy, I guess, to say, oh, I'm not surprised, make myself seem smarter, but I'm certainly not shocked that IU is where it is at this point.
Chris Corman is with us. Chris, you mentioned Cody Zeller as kind of the change in time for Crean from the beginning of his tenure to now and how he got the program here, but something that doesn't maybe get as much attention as his work as a player developer, this class with Will Sheehy and Victor Oladipo, guys that nobody really wanted or recruited, and he turned those guys into household names down the Big Ten, especially Oladipo. So what have been your thoughts on those two guys and then Crean's ability to develop those players over the course of now 3 years?
Right, yeah. I think there were always two questions about Tom Crean as a coach, and that was, number one, how good he was as an in-game coach, whether he could match wits with some of the other best coaches in the country and make changes on the fly and, you know, put his team in position to win. And two was as a player developer. You know, obviously his success at Marquette came from getting a guy like Dwayne Wade and Wade exploding into, you know, clearly probably the best player in the country during the tournament that year. So I think there was sort of the question of whether Dwayne Wade was just one sort of guy that he got lucky on. And we've seen that Crean and the staff he has now, and I think it's important to note that there's been some stability on the staff, at least with Tim Buckley. And he's been there and I think Tom has just done a good job of surrounding himself with people who can really develop players. And then he went out and found athletes. Sheehy and Oladipo, you know, we're near football signing day, and so you always think about sort of past years. I mean, I'm sure you guys saw there were stats released today of how many football top 100s are busts, you know, and it's an astounding number. Like 49% of the kids who were on Rivals top whatever ended up being complete busts. And so much of that, I think, goes to the fact that some kids are athletic but don't understand quite how to use it yet. And so they don't crack into that top 100. And some kids aren't actually that athletic or that skilled but understand how to play at a younger age. And then when they make the jump, it doesn't translate because they just simply are physically incapable. And I think Sheehy and Oladipo are both guys who are very clearly physically capable of being great college players, but maybe didn't understand how to do that when they were younger. Oladipo was in a system where he was expected to do a bunch of different things outside D.C., and Sheehy was in Florida. You know, who knows what they teach down there as far as basketball goes. So, you know, I think Crean clearly has found two guys who were right on the cusp, and there's no question that he has developed them. So I think Tom Crean has answered that part of it. And, you know, as I said, I think Buckley has a fair amount to do with that. And maybe even having Calvert Cheney there has done it. But that's part of what a good head coach does, is he finds people to sort of mitigate some of his weaknesses or help where he needs help. But, you know, Crean just being an intense guy is going to really push people. You know, I'm sure he's relentless in practice. He's relentless in press conferences. He's not even trying to train us for anything. So he certainly answered that side of it.
The collateral damage of, you know, bringing in all these great recruits and being such a high-profile team is you lose players to the NBA, you know, quickly. And at the end of this year, we could see a little bit of a mass exodus to the NBA with Zeller, Watford, Oladipo. You never know who's going to go, but when your stock's high, players tend to make the jump. Do you think, you know, you got to know the state of Indiana really well, especially its fans during your time in Bloomington. Do you think, you know, people in Bloomington are going to have a problem with guys leaving after a year or two and having IU kind of be a stepping stone to the NBA? I think, you know, IU fans are kind of critical of Kentucky of that sometimes.
Right.
It's not as much of it hasn't been as much of an issue at Indiana in recent years. Do you see that being something that pops up in Bloomington?
Yeah, that's a great question because, as you said, IU fans have spent how many ever years now just railing on Calipari for running a little minor league system down in Lexington. And as is often the case, a fan base is now having to look in the mirror and see, well, wait a minute, we may have become what we hate, but you know, I think if that means a national title, they'll be fine with becoming that. As you said, Indiana basketball fans have a little bit of a different viewpoint on the proper way of doing things and how much loyalty you should have to the team. You know, I think Eric Gordon is one of the primary examples, and obviously his career, taken in context, is hard to understand because there was all this other weird stuff going on with Samson and the rest of the kids on the team. Who really, you know, sort of, I mean, that whole thing fell apart. You guys were at least paying attention at that point. I mean, you know, players sort of mutiny and, you know, DJ White was looking at the NBA and Gordon was looking at the NBA. So it was hard to really understand it, but I was so shocked when people got upset that Eric Gordon could dare to go to the NBA. Eric Gordon should have been playing in the NBA when he was like 14.
Right.
The guy was just a physical freak. I mean, he's just an amazing athlete, just a total prodigy. You know, say what you will about his career now, but I mean, all that matters in pro sports, again, is whether you can do it physically. I mean, you just have to have the tools. And Eric Gordon, there was no question about the tools. So the fact that there was some sort of rebuff about him, and he had been injured and, you know, didn't play well in the tournament, so I think people sort of thought, oh, he owes us a little bit more, but you know, obviously he was ready. So I don't know that there's an answer to that question. I don't know how IU fans are going to take it if Oladipo leaves early, or, you know, Zeller could have left after last year. But, you know, I think that's just something that's going to play out, and you guys and Dustin Dopierak and people like that are going to have to sort of cover how that goes. But, you know, there is an ever-expanding push, I think, to get rid of the one-and-done rule. It's just, you know, it hurts college basketball too much to force these kids to go once, to go for 1 year. I mean, if there are guys who want to go right away, they should be able to go, and then maybe go to the college baseball rule where, you know, if you don't go right out of school, then you got to stay 3 years. I think that makes a little bit more sense, so we'll see where it all sort of heads down the road.
Chris, you mentioned that Crean as a coach has kind of answered one of the two main questions people had about him being the player developer that he has become. What do you think the answer is to the other question, or do you think that's been decided yet, his ability as an in-game coach? I mean, I think we've seen it a couple times in their two losses this year to teams that play more methodical pace, slow you down, make you play in the half court, play defense in Butler and Wisconsin. The adjustments maybe haven't always been there. Cody Zeller wasn't on the floor at the end of the Butler game. That's been talked about. What are your thoughts on Crean as an in-game coach, how he's developed in that department and how he currently stands there?
Right. I mean, I should be really careful in saying that I've probably seen, you know, 30 minutes of IU basketball this year and not much of the past couple of years. So I think Tom Crean probably is a pretty decent game coach, but because that's the one really identifiable area where that seems to hold his teams back. You know, Marquette teams playing in just an incredibly difficult Big East back in the day never seemed to really be able to get over the hump and win big games, and that sort of became the tag on Tom Crean. But you just can't get around the fact that, as you said, Butler and Wisconsin, which are these really sort of technically sound teams that everybody admires for how well coached they are the two teams that ended up beating IU. You know, there are other teams that are as physical and have great talent, and IU went out and, you know, when the boxing match was, you know, a pretty straightforward boxing match, they were able to win, but when they were asked to change and have to deal with something different, they couldn't do it. So that certainly is a reflection, Green, and that's going to be what comes along next. So, you know, as we get to the tournament, it's so much of it is about coaching quickly, because you've got to play a few days later against a team that you probably know nothing about, you know, a team from the Pac, whatever, Pac-12, is it 12 now, 16? I don't know. But, you know, you have to really sort of adjust quickly. You know, Crean is in such an interesting situation because Brad Stevens is right up the road. And the more time passes on what Brad Stevens did taking those Butler teams to the Final Four, the more impressive that gets. I mean, I just can't say enough how incredible it was that he led those, that he orchestrated those two runs, and how much of a feat of coaching that was. You know, so I think by comparison, Crean suffers a little bit, and whether that's fair or not is beside the point. The fact is, Brad Stevens is an hour and 50 minutes up the road, so he's a natural comparison, and Tom Crean is not really matched up in some ways there. But you know, this is his best chance to show, hey, I can take a really talented team and I can make the adjustments and do what needs to be done in the tournament. And of course, Crean also was in the same state with Bo Ryan before, so he's often been compared to him, and there was a little bit of a rivalry between those two when they were in Wisconsin. So, you know, I think it's sort of an interesting narrative that popped up again this year.
Yeah, for such a small guy, Brad Stevens sure seems to cast a pretty big shadow over Tom Crean down in Bloomington.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, you know, I think I've been critical of Crean as an in-game coach too, but I really think, you know, now that I think about it, the rest of the season is the ultimate tryout for him. I mean, if this were poker, Tom Crean has the best hand at the table. The question is, you know, can he play it right? Can he knock other guys out of the table? And I mean, Crean has as talented of a team as there is in the country right now. They're favorites to make the Final Four, possibly win the title. This is the year we find out how good of a coach Tom Crean is, because it was pretty unfair to judge him when the team was winning six games a year, because that's just not coaching. You know, if you're dealing with single-digit totals and wins, coaching isn't going to play too much of a factor. But this is when you find out, you know, who has the edge in coaching. When the teams are this good and you've got all this talent, what can you get out of them? I think this is when we find out what Tom Crean's like as an in-game coach. Well, Chris, we're going to let you go, but we really appreciate you coming on the show. Always great to talk to you. And if you still have Tom Crean's number, would you mind sending him a note and telling him to go easy on Dustin in some of those press conferences? It's tough to watch.
I do. I just love Tom Crean's number. I don't know if he answers me anymore, but you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with a little reporter coach ornery-ness, which is pretty apparent when I watch those videos. But, you know, it's Bloomington, Indiana, and there's got to be an angry coach there, right? I mean, that's just the way it's supposed to be. You know that. You're a native.
That's right. Dustin's just the martyr. That's the only problem.
Well, yeah. He's looking for the wrong paper, but that's a topic for a different day, I guess.
All right, Chris. Well, thanks for coming on again, man. We appreciate it.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be back with our next guest, Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall. All All right. Welcome back, everybody. We are now joined by Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall, who's kind enough to come on the show today and answer some of your questions that you posted on the Inside the Hall forum. What's going on, Alex?
Not much, gentlemen. How are we doing?
We're doing well. We're happy to have you. We got some good questions. Had a little bit of Monty Python nonsense, it looked like, as well in that thread, but also some good IU questions. You ready to roll?
Sure.
All right, cool. Well, first question for both of you, but let's start with Alex. What type of teams do you think are going to give IU trouble in the tournament in the season the rest of the year or in the tournament?
I mean, the logical answer to that is basically what we've seen so far is the two teams that have tried to slow it down, more so Wisconsin than Butler did, but I felt like Butler played more of a half-court game with Indiana when they could, and Wisconsin more so kind of slowed it down and tried to play in the half-court. So I think it's going to be a team that doesn't try to run with Indiana, Michigan State, and Michigan. I tried to do that a little bit, I felt like, and that wasn't really much of a good strategy, especially in Assembly Hall. But I think it's going to be a team that plays physical and kind of can grind it out in the half court that's going to give Indiana potentially problems in the tournament.
What about you, Justin? Do you think it's going to be a team that slows it down, or do you think there's any teams out there that can outshoot IU?
No, I agree with Alex. I think it's going to be one of those non-traditional teams that play a different style than Indiana. As we've talked about before on this show, Indiana likes to run and gun. They like to have free-flowing offense, and when you make them play a possession game, I don't believe Tom Crean's that great of a half-court offense coach. So if you force him to play like that the entire game, limit the number of possessions they get, make them execute the ones that they do, you're probably going to have more success than if you let them run, have 15, 20 more possessions because they're getting out on the fast break and scoring that way. And it takes less, or it takes kind of the pressure off of them from having to execute in that half court. So I don't know how many capable teams there are like that. Butler and Wisconsin are probably two of the only ones that are like that. So as long as they don't see one of those teams again, and even if they saw Butler again, I think they run over them by 10 or 15 points. I thought that was kind of a fluke thing at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. But it's going to be one of those kind of teams, non-traditional. I don't think teams like Michigan, teams that play similar styles, would give them as much trouble as those other teams.
Just one other thought jumping in here, kind of something that John Gassaway, a former Podcast on the Brink guest, had on ESPN Insider the other day. He was talking about Indiana's turnover problems, and I think that's kind of looking at one other type of team that could potentially pose problems, and maybe a team like VCU that does some full court pressure and can force Indiana into some turnovers. I know they played VCU last year in the tournament, but there's not a lot of teams that play that style either, but that's potentially another type of basketball that could slow Indiana down if there's a team that can turn them over a bunch and kind of keep them out of what they want to do and limit their possessions.
Well, that kind of leads into another question we got. Someone wanted to know what we thought about the evolution of Yogi Ferrell this season. I think we've all been really impressed with him the past two games. Justin, have you seen enough from Yogi to think, you know, that point guard play isn't going to be an issue and that IU could handle, you know, a press for a full 40 minutes?
Yeah, I have. I have, and I think that's one of the big upgrades that they have on this team that they didn't have a year ago. Obviously, Jordan Holes was a guy that was really pestered and really didn't play very well in that VCU game, had a lot of turnovers, ended up being on the bench at the end of the game. And Yogi brings that element, the ball handling element, the ability to provide quickness at the point guard position, find open cutters. But as far as his evolution goes this season, I think he's kind of always had the defense and the passing ability. We've seen that since day one when he got here. I think the thing he's added to his game that's really helped his team is that three-point jump shot. And he had the ability to make that shot in high school, but he didn't make it consistently earlier this year. It took him a while to start making it consistently, and now he is. We saw two of them right back-to-back against Michigan on Saturday, saw a few up at Purdue last week. If he's making that shot consistently and forcing the defense to come out and guard him all the way out there, it just opens things up for everybody else.
Yeah, I'm on the same page as you, Justin. Alex, what about you?
I agree. I mean, the three-point shot has been coming along. I also feel like he's done a better job of kind of getting in the lane and finishing plays around the basket. Mm-hmm. That's not really something that we saw him do with as much confidence early in the season. And also the free throws. I mean, he hit 8 of 8 free throws, I think, in the final 2 minutes of the game against Michigan. And there have been some times earlier in the season where he struggled a little bit from the free throw line. And, you know, for a guy that's going to have the ball in his hands at important times, he's got to be able to step down and not step in and knock down the free throws. And what better, what bigger stage, I guess, is a better way to put it, than a game day game against Michigan, who is ranked number one, to step in and knock down free throws. So the just kind of piggybacking, I agree with everything Justin said, but those are two other areas I guess you can kind of look at for growth for Yogi as well.
And another thing I thought he did well on Saturday was at times denying the ball from Trey Burke. I mean, that is no easy task. He's probably one of the hardest people to do that in the country, but I thought he did a good job on Burke at times, and he just gives Crean another perimeter defender to throw at, you know, talented opponents. Between Yogi, Sheehy, and Oladipo, IU can really give, you know, scorers some different looks to kind of frustrate them. Moving on, another question. Someone wants to know, is Watford this team's X factor? He's definitely the most debated player on the Hoosiers, I think. What do you think, Justin? Is Christian Watford the X factor for IU's title hopes?
I think he potentially could be, but I think they have a number of X factors, guys that could potentially impact whether they go to the Final Four and win a Big Ten and national championship or whether they don't. But Watford's certainly at the top of the list because he's been so positive at times for Indiana during his career and negative at others. But I think he's really starting to find his role in this particular team. Earlier in the year, he stopped the ball too much on the offense, looked for his own shot, maybe took some questionable shots, just wanted to be part of a number one team, wanted to be part of something going on in Bloomington, and had a hard time realizing that maybe they didn't need him to do as much as he did in past seasons. But now, the last two games in particular, I've noticed he's really playing within the offense, playing within himself more, and taking the shots that are there. In the Purdue game, for example, when they won by 37, Tom Crean talked after the game about the ball movement and the fact that the ball never stopped. And that's sometimes a problem when Watford's on the floor. It gets to him and stops while he looks and tries to make a one-on-one move. That hasn't happened so much the last two games. He's playing within himself. He's getting to the defensive glass like he did against Michigan, which is big. Somebody to help Cody Zeller out in there. So I think Watford can be this team's X factor, and he certainly has been the last two games.
Alex, how about you?
I think I don't think it's any secret or any coincidence that as Watford, I mean, Watford's been playing better, I think, since Big Ten play started. He hasn't had a game. He's scored in double figures every game. I think he's averaging 13 and a little bit over 7 rebounds over the last 5 all IU wins. So I think it kind of starts with getting him engaged early in the game and getting him on the glass, and I think that kind of gets him going both defensively and gets his confidence going. And he's not really taking some of the bad forced shots that we saw maybe earlier in the season when he was kind of pressing. I mean, that North Carolina game, I think he was something like 1 for 9, and people were grumbling, you know, he doesn't need to be taking that many shots if he's not knocking them down. I think the thing about him now is he's taking pretty much what the defense gives him, and he's also doing a good job getting to the line. And for a 6'9 guy that's shooting close to 50% on threes and doing such a great job rebounding, I think it's hard not to look at him as one of the, you know, the important factors that Indiana needs to play well to make a deep run in March. I mean, he plays well on the big stage, and I think as the season rolls along, his experience playing in the NCAA tournament is going to be valuable for this team.
Definitely. All right, last question, Alex, before we let you get out of here. How important is depth to IU winning a title? You know, I think we've kind of regarded the Hoosiers as a deep team earlier in the season. Lately, there have been some questions. Against Michigan, the bench only chipped in 8 points. Great defensive game from Jeremy Hollowell with 3 blocks, but not a lot of offensive firepower. How important is depth going to be?
I think it's a little bit overrated right now in college basketball in general. I mean, you look at Kentucky, kind of what they did last year. They didn't really play more than six or seven guys, and with the number of TV timeouts and the amount of timeouts in college basketball in general, I think, you know, as you know, teams can afford to play less guys because there's just more time for breaks. And in Indiana this year, I think the rotation has kind of really settled down to seven or eight. I mean, there's a couple of guys that do get minutes here and there, but kind of looking forward, it looks like there's probably nine guys, if you count the starters, Will Sheehy, Remy Abel, Derek Elston, and Jeremy Hollowell, that are probably going to be in the mix for playing time, at least major minutes down the stretch. And, you know, Elston has kind of hit or miss with the injuries. So if they can keep, you know, seven or eight guys playing at a reasonably high level, I don't think you really need more than that to go deep into March and win a title.
What about you, Justin?
For me, it's not so much about offensive depth and getting scoring from the bench, but more defensive depth and having guys that can come in off the bench and perform at the same level defensively as the starters do and give Tom Crean the confidence to leave them in the game, maybe late in the game. And I think that's coming along. I mean, like you mentioned, there's only 8 points from the bench in the Michigan game, but this team has enough scoring weapons in the starting lineup that it doesn't necessarily need to get that much scoring from the bench outside of Will Sheehy at times. And Jeremy Hollowell played a great defensive game on Saturday, had three blocks, really D'd up Glenn Robinson the third well. I thought Hunter Mosquera-Perea was going to provide more defensive depth this year, but he hasn't really, and he's kind of found himself outside of the main rotation now. Could certainly get back in, but he's not in there right now. And then Derek Elston, I mean, he's had the injury issues, so maybe he's not 100% defensively. He's been working on his shot to try and help with the scoring. But for me, the depth factor is more important defensively, because when you get into March, you're probably not going to get 10 and 12 point scoring efforts from Hollowell and Remy Abel. You're going to get the guys in the starting lineup scoring the majority of your points, and you're going to need people at times to come in and spell them on defense. And I think we're starting to see that develop for this team.
Yeah, I definitely thought that, you know, Crean was going to kind of do more line changes during the Big Ten season. We'd see mass substitutions kind of like we used to see, but I just don't think he's needed to, and that the starters have been so good. You know, they don't need to bring anyone else in. Like Alex said, they don't need as much rest. I mean, if you look at the Michigan game, Christian Watford and Cody Zeller played 65 minutes and had one foul combined. And they got 20 of IU's 36 rebounds, so it's not like they were shying away from contact either. When you have your star players only draw one foul and play 65 minutes, you know, you don't have to worry about depth. That doesn't become an issue. And this was a Ted Valentine officiated game. I mean, that's incredible.
Exactly.
All right, Alex, we appreciate you coming on the show. Always fun talking to you. Thanks for answering some questions. We'll definitely have you back later this season.
Thanks for having me.
And that will do it for this episode of Podcast on the Brink. Thanks again to Chris Corman and Alex for coming on the show. Justin and I will be back next week, so be sure to check back with Inside the Hall. Until then, for Justin Albers, I'm Matt Dollinger. Thanks for listening, and have a good one.